Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news. And we've got some big news this morning because Manchester United have been linked to Nico Schlotterbeck of Dortmund from a very good source. Also, Morgan Rogers, Bruno Fernandes, Player of the Month. We'll be talking Luis Skelly, João Gomes, James Garner, and there's somebody else on the tip. Branthwaite. We're back in for Branthwaite, apparently, as well. So lots to get onto on this Good Friday. I hope you're having a good Friday without the religious connotations of what Good Friday actually means. We won't go there. But I hope you are having a good Friday. Welcome. It's a bank holiday in the UK, so it was a little bit later today because we're just doing some things this morning. But that doesn't matter. We've still got an 8 o'clock show for you tonight, live and all over this weekend. So get involved. I hope you're doing well. And as always, get your comments in. So we're going to start off with this very interesting story that's coming out from Plettigol. Florian Plettenberg, you may know the name when it comes to transfer time. He is a German journalist and very good around German transfers and sometimes sticks his nose into outside of Germany. But this is very German-centric. So Manchester United are interested in Dortmund's Nico Schlotterbeck. An unnamed club has made an official contact with the players' camp. If he doesn't sign his new contract, he will be available in the summer for 30 to 35 million euros. I'm telling you now, that's bargain of the summer. I mean, if you don't know anything about Schlotterbeck, I mean, I've actually got a shirt here that was sent to me by the Bundesliga, and it's actually signed by the whole team, including Schlotterbeck. We'll be giving that away later. No, we won't. But yeah, I mean, look, obviously I've watched a lot of the Bundesliga this season with our exclusive rights on That's Football. But you don't need to watch a lot of the Bundesliga to know that Schlotterbeck is low-key one of the best centre-backs in Europe. And Real Madrid, Liverpool, and a lot of the other clubs are looking at him. I think this is the sort of deal that would get many people very, very excited. He is out of contract in a year. So if that contract's not going to get signed with 1 year left on his contract and playing in the Bundesliga, you're not talking stupid money here. You're not talking 50, 60 million. I think Plettenberg is absolutely correct. You're talking around, I mean, you know, maybe 30 million, maybe 35 million pounds. I know he's saying euros, but I'm saying, you know, even if it was 30 to 35 million pounds, it's still a very, very good deal. Also, premium centre-back in United's eyes because he's got ability, he's got agility, he's got speed, he's left-footed and he's 6'3". Remember, we are going to be losing Casemiro this summer and Harry Maguire at some point. He is very good in the air. So I don't want to be disrespectful to people like Harry Maguire or Lisandro Martinez, but Schlotterbeck, who's only just age profile as well, he's only just turned 26, I think it would be a really intelligent move for Manchester United. And you'd be wondering just how involved Favel is on this, because there's a couple of talents coming out of the Bundesliga at the moment. There's a story on Almala, which I want to touch on in a little bit. But this is the sort of deal that if Man United want to get back to the top, you've got to be all over these types of deals, because that will definitely have an impact on how United develop. Like, because I know Sesko's a good signing and Lemons is a good signing and Dorgu hopefully will be a good signing, but these types of signings, they don't have to be Premier League exclusive either. I mean, you look at Cunha and Mbeumo, they have been good signings. I know they've had little dips, but they have been good signings. And I think Schlotterbeck, United should be all over it, because he would be the profile of centre-back that you need. My concern is, and I've seen some people say it in the chat, what do I think of Schlotterbeck? Quick, tall, good on the ball, perfect, experience. That would be perfect for Manchester United. My concern is, and a few people have said it in the chat, if Harry Maguire is being kept, which looks very, very, very likely, does that indicate we won't actually buy a centre-back? Because I'm telling you now, for £30 million, 26-year-old Schlotterbeck, who was only 26 at Christmas, is absolutely perfect. Now, some people said, what about his injury problems? Not really. He had an injury in September last year. Sorry, April to September last year, he had an issue where he missed 20 games. But post that, not really anything. Missed a couple of games in February with a muscular problem. But people do pick. You're never going to get anybody perfect, really. You know, it's very rare that you're going to find a Bruno Fernandes. Ghost says, was this pre-recorded? Obviously not, mate, because we're live and I'm interacting with the chat. I would be excited if United were looking at this. I just want to put a word of warning out there. When you actually read what Pletigol is saying, it says an unnamed club has made official contact. Man United are interested. So, I mean, in the five strands of transfer, is this true, bollocks, agent-led, Dortmund-led, or is he looking for a new contract at Dortmund and Man United are being used? So, yeah. But I think the only reservation, this is just too good a signing. I would say 100% sign him up. You don't get players of that quality for £30 million who are experienced. And that, to me, makes him perfect. But I said this when we gave Harry Maguire a new contract. Is that the club going, we can give Maguire a contract on reduced wages and not buy a centre-back and basically save money in the process? And I don't believe keeping Harry Maguire is a good idea if you're ignoring signing people like Schlotterbeck. So this is what I say. There is no action without consequence. And loads of people were going, oh, give Harry a new contract, give him a new contract. And I'm like, it's all right saying give him a new contract, but what are you not doing by doing that? Like, would Man City keep John Stones on at Man City and give him a new contract, or would they let him go and buy a centre-back? They'd buy a bloody centre-back. They just did it in January. They bought Gahey. So until Man United start acting like a club that goes and buys people, I mean, that's an opportunity as well. 1 year left on his contract. Perfect, left-footed. You know, it solves a lot of problems for United. Tall, quick, good on the ball. And I think, will we do that type of a deal? I'd like to be optimistic and say yes. Let's see what happens with it. But as always, I think we may have already dropped the hint that we're not going to do this by renewing Maguire, unfortunately. Morning, Mark. Keep up the great work, says Dane. Thank you very much. Having a laugh has gifted a membership as well. You're a legend, sir. Goldfridge says, if we go for a centre-back after keeping Maguire, it likely means that Lissandro or De Ligt cannot be trusted going forward, or Martinez might be leaving. I don't think we're going to get a centre-back. Because I think that when you look at it, you've got Maguire, you've got De Ligt, you've got Lissandro, you've got Luke Shaw, you've got Yoro, you've got Heaven. You've got six centre-backs for two positions. And I just don't think we're going to buy a centre-back. I really, really don't. And I agree with the only dog. There are too many sentimentals in this fan base. And look, you're absolutely correct, mate. A couple of weeks ago, we did a poll. Would you give Maguire a new contract? I think he'd scored a goal or played quite well, and nearly 60% said yes. And you sort of look at it and go, that's sentimentality. He's 33. He'll be 34 next season. He's picking up more injuries. He's been a good servant to the club. It's time to move him on, but people are like, give him a new contract. And then a couple of weeks later, you talk about Schlotterbeck, and everyone knows what a good signing that would be, but we can't do it because we've kept Maguire. And that's exactly what sentimentality is. The heart rules the head. And the head is move him on and get a centre-back in because there's an opportunity there. But it's all about the money, isn't it? We'll save money there to use it somewhere else. Having a laugh has gifted another membership as well. You're absolute legends, sir. Just sticking with Germany for a moment, I did see something this morning. But we'll come back to that about Rodri as well. I did see something this morning about Almada, and I'm just seeing if I can find it here. Where is it? Almada, also from Plettenberg. Cologne are pushing for a quick sale of Almada, preferably to the Premier League. There is no fixed asking price, but internally they are convinced that €40 million will not be enough. Brighton are seriously interested. Offers were made, but at that price they are currently out. Talks with English clubs are ongoing. No agreement or final decisions have been made. I'm telling you now, Almada is definitely worth a look. I don't know whether Man United are one of those clubs. I bet we're not. I bet we don't have the money, but that's another player that I think would be very good from the Bundesliga. Now, just before we move on, I wanted to just bring this in. This was on our Ben Jacobs show yesterday afternoon, and I just wanted to drop it back in because Manchester United held a meeting with Branthwaite's camp in February, and it was reiterated from the player side that his interest in United hasn't gone away. I mean, what are we doing? Like, if that I mean, I don't know whether that just slipped through the net for everybody yesterday, but Jarrad Branthwaite, oh my God. Like, he's okay, but he's not really set the world on fire since we tried to buy him last time. And currently has a contract till 2030. What are we doing holding talks with Jarrad Branthwaite? Like, Everton won't mess about. They'll still want 50, 60 million pounds. And he just isn't that type of a centre-back. I just don't know what we're doing. I think he's not as bad as people think. And, you know, it was quite an interesting move for him a few years ago. And he's still only 23. But again, it's sort of like Ineos get locked in on something, don't they? Like, they wanted Branthwaite. Everton wanted 70 million. We offered 45 and we walked away quite rightly. Two summers later, we're going to go back in again. And it's like a dog with a bone, isn't it? They can't just leave it alone and move on. Like, you've got Branthwaite that's probably going to cost you 60 million pounds, who's 23. And you've got Schlotterbeck, who's going to cost you 30 million pounds and is 26. Well, we know what United will do. Oh, we want the under 24-year-old. If Man United is still looking at Branthwaite, I mean, look, maybe homegrown quota, maybe there's some method in that as well, but I don't see Branthwaite as the type of player that's going to be good value. That's my issue, is he's not going to be good value. If you could get Branthwaite for £30 million, I'd say there might be some good value there. But the money that... It's like Lugia says, it's the same as Belaba. We scout a player, we believe it's the right player, and then evidence shows you that they're not, but we don't change targets. And I did see that from Ben Jacobs yesterday, and it did panic and alarm me a little bit, because I think to be holding talks with Branthwaite's camp in February, that's last month. Look, I'm sure Man United talked to a lot of players, but that would be concern, if I'm being honest. And it probably is, like John says, a Wilcox target, if we're being honest. One second. Yeah, so no, I just wanted to throw that back in because I'm just like, what the hell is all that about? Also, this morning, I saw a story out there talking about Manchester United being interested in Morgan Rodgers this summer and that Morgan Rodgers is thinking about leaving Aston Villa. Look, I think the Morgan Rodgers stuff is probably because, you know, he is an England international. He's a very good player. And unfortunately for Aston Villa, I think when you play for Aston Villa, like Jack Grealish and many other players, Milner when he was there, there is another step. There is unfortunately another step if you're at Villa, in the sense that I still think people look and go, I would leave Villa to go to Man City or Man United or Arsenal or Liverpool. So look, maybe Morgan Rodgers will be on the move, but he won't be a target for Manchester United. I wouldn't even give that any oxygen. I think the reality is he did play for Carrick at Middlesbrough. Maybe that's what it's all about. But United ain't going to sign Morgan Rodgers. It doesn't make any logical... I say we're not going to. If Bruno Fernandes left, you might need a player, but he's a very different profile player to Bruno Fernandes in that number 10 role. And it would take £100 million to get him. So I also think if we were going for a number 10 to replace Bruno, you know, Cole Palmer's been mentioned. I, for England, think Morgan Rodgers should play behind Harry Kane. But in a Man United side, I think Cole Palmer's more creative and intricate than Morgan Rodgers, who's a little bit more direct. So I can't see that. And the reason I mention it is, obviously, in this community, we have a lot of debate, we have a lot of conversation. I think it's also important that, and I said this last summer, we seem to have, if you think about, we've been doing this for like a decade. When I started doing this with you and those people who've been part of the community for that long, I'd say out of every transfer story, we were quite aware that, you know, 80, 90% of them are total nonsense. I don't know whether society's changed in football, but it feels like every story gets hyped now. Like somebody could say, you know, we're in advanced talks with, you know, an ITK, an in-the-know account or an aggregator could just start. And I've seen a few doing it already. There was an aggregator account on X that's been around for a while, and they've started posting stuff like they understand that Man United are doing this, that, and the other. I'm like, you can't post as a bloody aggregator. You can't be an aggregator account posting inside information. That's not how it works. You've got to say where it's coming from. It can't be like, the Manchester Evening News wouldn't necessarily say the Manchester Evening News understands. There'd be a journalist attached to that. And I think that in relation to Morgan Rogers, I think it's bullshit. And I think there is a lot of bullshit that doesn't get called out as being bullshit. On a daily basis, there'll be a story about a player or something, and it's like everybody takes it as truth without any verification or thought. We're not in for Morgan Rogers, and it's just another story of another player that we're going to get linked to. But what I did find really interesting this morning, and it's got a bit of a niche to it, is that Fabrizio Romano last night said that Manchester City have offered a new contract to Rodri. What's that got to do with Man United, Mark, you might say? Well, it's got a lot to do with it because he's only got a year left on his contract. It's a bit like Schlotterbeck, only got a year left on his contract. So you either sign the new contract and everybody backs off, or you don't sign the new contract and he's on the move this summer. Real Madrid are interested. How does that impact Manchester United? Well, we're not signing Rodri, but what we do know is that Manchester City want Elliot Anderson and potentially Tonali. Now, I think if Rodri stays, they still want Elliot Anderson because I think Elliot Anderson actually works better with a number six next to him. But if Rodri goes, I think that makes it doubly hard for us to get into a battle with Manchester City, because if they lose Rodri, they're not going to want to miss out on their number one target. And I just keep an eye on that. It does indirectly impact Manchester United, what happens with Manchester City and Rodri. So if he stays at Man City, I still think they want Elliot Anderson. If he leaves Man City, I think they make sure they get Elliot Anderson. So look, it is interesting. And it also means if Rodri stays, do they want Tonali? Probably not. If Rodri goes, they might go for Tonali and Anderson. So very interested to see how that pans out, really, because we are entering those important weeks as well. Tech Empire says, if Nagelsmann was the next Liverpool manager, people would be viewing him as the next Klopp. With United, he needs to be backed, which is highly unlikely with manager coming to us with intensity dropping. It's funny, I did a video last night about Nagelsmann and a little bit, you know, Nagelsmann versus Carrick. I looked at some of the comments, and even though you do a video detailing why Nagelsmann would be the right guy for Man United, in my opinion, you still get people with their replies. And I've seen a lot of these replies. What's he ever done in football? He's done nothing with his career. Why would we go for Nagelsmann? He's done absolutely nothing. And you think, I literally spent 3 minutes detailing what he did. He kept Hoffenheim up. He put them in the Champions League. He went to Leipzig. He took them to a semi-final of the Champions League and finished second in the Bundesliga. He went to Bayern. He won the Bundesliga. He's won the German Cup. I think he's won it twice. He's now managing Germany in the World Cup. You can't just... There are better ways to say you don't want Nagelsmann and you want Carrick than what has he done with his career? Because, look, he's a German manager. He's not going to have managed in the Premier League, but the equivalent of what he did in Germany would be to take somebody like Crystal Palace and put them in the Champions League. It would be then to go and take Brighton and take them to the Champions League semi-final. And then it would be to manage Man City and win the league. That's what he's basically done in Germany. And now he'd be managing England. So if you want Carrick or you want somebody else, that's absolutely fine. But Nagelsmann has achieved a lot, and he's not even 40 years of age. He has got a distinctive style of football as well. I mean, I was watching a clip with him and Ranić last night. It was on, I think it was on Man United Forever or something like that. And they were just sat there discussing. You can see the video, actually. You can't do likes anymore, can you? But it was posted last night on Man United Forever on X. And it's Nagelsmann and Ranić discussing the challenge of facing deep blocks. They were stressing the need for clear attacking patterns to create chances. And I just thought it was absolutely captivating, because it's like it was Nagelsmann and Ranić, and they were basically there together discussing how you break down a low block. And I was like, for that reason alone, give him a job. Because we've not been able to break a low block for years. But it then got me thinking, oh my God, how many years have we actually wasted? You know, a lot of us really like Favel and what he's doing at the club. But if we'd listened to Ranić 3 or 4 years ago, was it? It must be three. Was it, how many years ago was Ranić here? If Ten Hag did 2 and Amrim did 1, is it 3 or is it 4? If we'd listened to Ranić and we'd given him the director of football job, Favel would definitely be here. And Nagelsmann might have been here 2 years ago as well. So I think, you know, that I stand by my opinion. I think the argument against Nagelsmann with some people is he doesn't know the club. He's not managed in the Premier League. What's he ever done in football? And I'm like, Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Ancelotti, Jose Mourinho, Conte, all these managers that didn't know the Premier League and came in, and Arsene Wenger. Yeah, you know, this, he doesn't know the Premier League and he doesn't know the club, is just complete and utter nonsense. Come up with a better reason why you don't want Nagelsmann, because he hasn't achieved anything in his career and he doesn't know Manchester United. It doesn't wash. It doesn't wash. I think he's perfect for this football club. I think the things he's done in his career, the fact that he's still very young himself, his tactical flexibility and acumen, coupled with his ability to work at football clubs where, you know, you don't necessarily get everything you want, and the ability to develop youth, I think he has an incredible CV, and I think he's perfect for what Man United need. Whether United are clever enough to do it or not, nobody's going to move me away from the fact that I think Nagelsmann is the most exciting, realistic option out there. Obviously, Enrique would be the best option, but it sounds like that's pure fantasy. Hello, Mark. Thoughts on Maresca as our next coach? No, not for me. I think might be a little bit controversial, but I think I might take a risk on Carrick rather than Maresca. You see, I'm not totally against Carrick. Like, I would take Carrick over De Zerbi. I would take Carrick over Glasner. I may take Carrick over Maresca. I don't want Carrick to get the job. I think there's better managers out there, but I'm not opposed to him getting to the job if it's up against some shit I don't want. Carl, thank you very much. Welcome to the Members Club. No, he's gifted a membership, Carl. Absolute legend. You and having a laugh. La Familia says, why did he leave Bayern? He left Bayern because of a bit of a fallout. There was all sorts going on. But, I mean, he's managing Germany now, so it wasn't that significant. Why did Amrim leave Man United? It wasn't results-based. Goretzka could be a solid midfield option. No, too old, Brandon. Let's not waste our time on, you know, we can't go outside the parameters that the club have set. We're not going to buy a 31-year-old from Bayern. Imagine Nagelsmann with Ralf and Favel above him, says Grim. It won't be grim. Anyway, let's move on. I've got a couple of other bits I want to talk about this morning as well. Bruno Fernandes has been named Player of the Month, by the way, for the Premier League. I don't think it's officially come out, but it did leak last night. So congratulations to Bruno. Also, I saw this, Manchester United under Favel are really ramping up their scouting in the South American market. And Favel is leading that recruitment drive. Obviously, we've seen people like Leon and Orozco come in over the last 18 months, and they are looking to highlight that sort of development again. I think this was something that Ten Hag really, really wanted to do. And if you look at Ajax, Lisandro Martinez, Alvarez, there's a few players that they had, Anthony. Ajax were very good at the South American market. I think Brighton are pretty good at the South American market. And look, it's one of the few areas in the world where football is just still very much, football's very, very popular. But in South America, it's very, very popular. And there is so much talent there. And that's why there will always be the next Neymar or the next, you know, Messi coming out of there, because football is absolutely huge, and it's definitely a market that United have neglected. I like Favel a lot. I think he's on a different level to Wilcox. What I would say about Favel is it mainly is young talent that he's very good at, but and you do need to strike that balance. But we should be looking at the South American market, because the South American market tends to be young. You very rarely buy players from South America who are 25 or over. So that almost seems like a perfect fit to for Favel to be opening new opportunities in South America, because I think that, as we've seen, there are historically some very good players there. Thank you very much for that as well. This is just on the midfield. I saw this today. It was a comparison. People were going mad about this. So it was a comparison on @DataMB on X between James Garner and Maney. And it was one of those graphs, not graphs, you know, them circle things where it compares them. You know, remember when you used to play FIFA and you'd put one player next to the other and it would overlap their sort of pace and everything like that? You know, it's like a pointed, there's a circle and there's things around it like key passes, pace and this, that and the other. And they've got different heights of the thing and you overlay it. So they've done that basically. And the only thing that Maynou is slightly ahead of Garner on is forward passing, and it's only very slightly, and carrying the ball, and it's only very slightly. But when it comes to forward pass percentage and carrying of the ball, actual forward passes, James Garner plays more. Key passes, he plays more. Progressive passes, he plays way more. Duels, he wins way more. And possession won, he wins way more. So look, I mentioned this yesterday, there's a bit of a movement around Maynou at the moment to discredit him and make out he's not that good. And when you go and you will always find a player that you compare to somebody else and it will make them look shit. I mean, there's a challenge for you over the Easter weekend. Could you find a player that you could do that to that's better than Bruno on lots of different things? You might struggle, but you can always find a bunch of stats that make somebody look a bit shit. In relation to Maynou, possession won and duels and progressive passes are probably going to be low. In the position we want him to play, we probably want them to be high. However, we are still dealing with a player that probably 2 years ago was playing a little bit different than he is now. And I would challenge anybody on that. I think Maynou 2 years ago, going into those Euros, was a very different player to he is now. So you've got to look at why that is. What was it when you look back to Maynou 2 years ago, where he's winning his games in the last minute at Molineux and he's going to the World Cup, the Euros with England? What's the difference between Maynou 2 years ago and Maynou today? Some people might say there isn't a difference, but there, in my mind, there is. I think he was more dynamic. I think he was passing forward more. I think he was winning more tackles. This season, he looks a little bit less dynamic, a little bit slower, and he's not quite that player. Could that be because he's had quite a disruptive season where he's only started playing again in January? Could that be because psychologically it's been quite disruptive, even all the T-shirt stuff and everything like that? Lord Sky says it's because he's bulked up. Mr. Knight says it's because he had more confidence. These are all factors. But what I would say is we're about to hand him a new contract. This is a player that it's really important people don't start overanalyzing to a point where they're saying he's shit, because we're about to hand him a new contract and he still is young enough to get back to where he was and go better than that. So whilst I do agree that, look, we can all see it, I don't think he's been electric in a Man United shirt this season. And he's definitely lacking where he was 2 years ago. But there's absolutely no reason why he can't get back there. And surely, he might be going to the World Cup. I mean, he's got a chance of going to the World Cup. So I think it's just too early. And it reminds me of Dorgu, where people were just writing him off and then suddenly he's everybody's favourite. So I think the most important thing for Maynou is to be part of the plans, which I think he is, to have a really good pre-season because he's still very young. And I think next season he'll probably be judged with more scrutiny, but I don't really see the pile on Maynou at all, to be honest with you. How much pressure do you think Nagelsmann would be under from the off if he got the job, given how the media reacted to Tuchel taking England? Plus, he'd be taking the job off Carrick, an Englishman, says Patrick Lynch. I don't think he would, and I don't think that's a reason not to give him the job, Patrick. I mean, I think you raise a fair point, but I don't think that's going to be a problem. Man United cause problems for managers. If you look at Erik ten Hag, you look at Ruben Amorim, you give somebody a job and you almost throw them to the wolves, and their job is actually to help and protect that manager. And I think United have always been very quiet in the background and not very vocal. The director of football never talks. The CEO never talks. The manager, and Mourinho said this, at Manchester United, you're the coach, you're the manager, you're the head of PR, you're the director of football, and you're the chairman, and you're the CEO, because nobody actually does any leadership talks. Nobody actually takes any responsibility. You look at some clubs, and the CEO and the sporting director talk quite regularly to the press, especially the local press. Man United don't do that. So I think whoever the next manager is, the Man United job, they don't. The funny thing is, they're such a bunch of hypocrites. They don't want a manager, they want a head coach. But that head coach ends up, I mean, Amorim was right. Like, you're apparently a head coach, but then they treat you, they make you do all the work of a manager. You know, you do every interview, you talk about stadiums, you talk about profit and loss, you talk about transfer targets. So if Nagelsmann got the job, or Enrique got the job, or even Carrick got the job, one of the best things Manchester United could do is create an environment where it's not just the manager exposed all the time. You know, it's part of a wider team of success. But I also think you massively underestimate Nagelsmann if you think he's going to struggle under pressure. Like, the German national job is not, you know, any national jobs. You're under huge scrutiny, Bayern Munich as well. And also, let's not forget, not every foreign manager comes into the Premier League and the press dislike them. Pochettino, massively liked and respected. Pep Guardiola, the same. Jurgen Klopp, the same. So I don't think that Nagelsmann would need to worry about the media reaction. If you bring a manager in like that, you're clearly building a project that could go the way that Liverpool did when they bought Klopp in. And there are similarities. There are big similarities between Liverpool bringing Klopp in and Man United bringing Nagelsmann in. In fact, you could argue that Nagelsmann's CV is better and his style of football is on a par. So if I was Manchester United, I would look at not Sir Alex Ferguson's era, because it's too long ago. You can't look at Sir Alex Ferguson. It happened in the 80s and the 90s. You've got to look at what's been successful in recent years. And I still think in recent years, the most impressive build back of a big club was Liverpool with Jurgen Klopp. Because Chelsea's and Manchester City's was always about money. Arsenal's hasn't actually come to fruition yet. But the Liverpool Jurgen Klopp thing, I remember saying on this channel a few years ago, I don't think I'll ever see Liverpool win a title again in my lifetime. They're just nowhere near it. And then he went and did it. So I think that the most impressive, as much as I don't like it, the most impressive rebuild I've seen in the last decade was Liverpool with Klopp. I'd be looking at that if I was Man United. I really would. And also, the Bundesliga is the closest thing to the Premier League in world football when it comes to speed, intensity. In fact, this season, the Bundesliga is quicker and balls in play more. But normally, the Premier League is the quickest and most intense league in the world. It's just gone a bit stop-start and a bit bloody pragmatic this year, but the Bundesliga is quite close to the Premier League, more so than La Liga or the Eredivisie or the Portuguese League or the Italian League. We cannot rely on luck. Get me Nagelsmann, says Keel Robinson. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your super chat there. A couple other bits I want to talk about. We've done the Rodri thing. Oh, yes, this one as well. Also from Ben Jacobs yesterday. Just want to pick up on this. Man United. Remember what I said on Tuesday. Expect over the next few days Manchester United to be linked to João Gomes in more credible ways. Well, it was Ben Jacobs yesterday, and there's a couple of other people who've been talking about it in the last couple of days as well. Man United are considering João Gomes as a potential summer signing. He's already been monitored in January. Wolves weren't open to selling then. The plan appears to be phased midfield recruitment. United will first sign one midfielder, then target a complementary player who can play deeper whilst also progressing the ball forward. This profile is meant to suit Mainoo. Gomes fits that deeper, progressive role well and is expected to be available at a more affordable price. It's very interesting that, because there's a little bit more detail than we had on Tuesday, but I did say João Gomes and Man United is going to start becoming more and more concrete over the next few days, and it is becoming more and more concrete. Now, it might not please everybody, but it was good information, and it's the same as Liam Delap last year. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's good information, and lo and behold, it is happening. I think the interesting thing there is Man United will go for one midfielder and then they'll go for a deeper midfielder. If João Gomes is the second midfielder, I'm not actually convinced that's the quality of summer Man United are meant to be having here. In my opinion, the first two signings need to be extraordinary, and then the third signing can be a João Gomes or a Scott or a Tyler Adams or someone like that. But it seems to me that we're sort of lurching towards two midfielders, where the second midfielder is the quality of the third midfielder we need. So we don't get two really good midfielders and a third midfielder. We get one good midfielder and then a João Gomes as the second. And that's what's worrying me, because I don't think that's enough. I heard Ben Jacobs yesterday saying Ugarte looks like he's going to be the fall guy of the Man United rebuild. But if Ugarte goes and Casemiro is gone, then you're left with Mainoo. I just don't know what we're doing in the midfield that we can't figure this out. If Casemiro's gone and Ugarte's gone, you've only got Mainoo. And if you buy two midfielders, we've got six centre-backs next season for two positions. But in the midfield, we're going to have three for two. Six for two at centre-back, three for two in the midfield, and midfield's more demanding. So I don't get the numbers that we've got. And somebody in the chat just said, and what if Mainoo's not good enough as well? I mean, yeah, we're all assuming that Mainoo is the answer. But even if Mainoo and the two signings are decent, three midfielders is not enough. And don't start talking to me about we can play Bruno or Mount there. I mean, they are not midfielders in this system. Bruno is not a midfielder anyway, but at least in an Amrim system, he's got three centre-backs behind him. Bruno in a midfield too, with two centre-backs behind him, you're having a bloody laugh. That Mainoo in mounted a midfield too with two centre backs behind him. You're having a bloody laugh. So, and I mean, and it can't be a young player either. People talk about people like Thwaites. You can't bring a kid to be the fourth midfielder. You have a kid as the fifth midfielder where there's no pressure. So, I think it's not just a nice to have; it's a must have that we need three midfielders. And I don't mind João Gomes as one of the three, but João Gomes as one of the two. What if he doesn't work? And what if Mainoo doesn't work? We're in trouble. We can't be left thin in the midfield. And even if we sign two midfielders, I think we're thin in the midfield. Daniel Thompson says, I hope Mark and United Stand need to be bold, and instead of having the brakes on, get the best in all areas. We need to strive to be the best, become obsessed with being the best, or we won't progress. Great show, says Daniel. Thank you very much, Daniel. And also, just on that, if you do buy João Gomes, he's probably going to cost about £30 million. If you do buy Schlotterbeck, he's probably going to cost about £30 million. What incredible value that is to spend £60 million, get a left-footed centre-back who's fantastic and 26, and get a midfielder who's very good, Premier League proven, and he's about 24, 25 as well, for £60 million. We talk about quantity. That would be an incredible bit of double business to spend £60 million and get João Gomes and Schlotterbeck, and then you've still got hopefully another couple of hundred million to get a couple of midfielders and a winger. But I can already tell that's not going to happen. I mean, three midfielders are going to cost you 150 million probably. A decent winger is going to probably cost you another 60 million. So, and this, you know, that might be conservative. So 220 million is going to go on three midfielders and a winger. And you still need a left back and a centre back. You're going north of 300. So I already know that we're not going to get everything we need this summer. We're just not. Whether we only get two midfielders, whether we don't get a left back, whether we don't get a centre back, whether we don't get a winger, I think we'll be coming out at the end of August going, we haven't actually got everything we want. I just can't see where the numbers are coming from for Manchester United to do that, really. And the question will be, where do we sacrifice and not do something? And I think, to be honest with you, centre-back is probably where that's going to be. Yeah, we've done that. Thank you. Thanks everyone who's tuning in this morning. Let us know where you're watching from, just as I quickly survey all my notes that I wanted to go through this morning. Interesting stuff about Lacey now being permanently training with the first team. Hopefully in the final few weeks of the season, we'll get to see a little bit more of Lacey. I mean, Seb still talks about that one he hit the post, wasn't it? Against Burnley. Inches away from iconic debut goal, and it was so close. But look, he will get more minutes. I guarantee you Carrick's going to give him more minutes, and excited when that happens. Bit more about Lewis Skelly. I mean, it seems to me like the best update about Lewis Skelly was probably the one Ben Jacobs mentioned yesterday, that if Man United did make a move for him, you'd have to significantly overpay for Arsenal to sell. I mean, I wouldn't pay a fair price for Lewis Skelly, let alone overpay for him. I mean, to me, there are Premier League proven left back options cheaper than him. Why would you overpay for somebody who's a big risk? I mean, Truffert will be cheaper than Lewis Skelly and he's better. Lewis Hall would probably not be that much more expensive than Lewis Skelly and he's miles better. So the Lewis Skelly one, for me, it just needs to be put to bed and United need to move on from that. Because to me, it just reads like it's another obsessive young player. It's the sort of stuff Chelsea do. And we shouldn't be following Chelsea as much as, you know, as we are, really. We don't need to do that. Right. Thanks, everyone, for watching this morning. I hope you've had a fantastic morning so far, day, whatever you're doing. I am back with you at 8 o'clock tonight. 8 o'clock show live tonight. Obviously, we'll react if anything else happens. No Bundesliga tonight. I don't know why there's no Friday night game tonight in the Bundesliga. I was checking that earlier. I was like, have we got Bundesliga tonight? And it's like, no, we haven't. Even though there are Bundesliga fixtures tomorrow, there is no Friday night game tonight, which is a little bit strange, but no Friday night Bundesliga tonight. So we'll be live here at 8 o'clock with the 8 o'clock show. Thanks everybody for watching. Absolute legends. Take care, stay safe, and I'll speak to you all in a bit.